Well, wherever you are, good morning. It's Paul in for Melissa. Paul Pacelli in for Melissa Sheketoff. She's back on Thursday. And wherever you are, you may be saying, hey, it's about that time for a flu shot, maybe. In fact, I was thinking to myself the other day, self, I said, get your flu shot. It's about this time we learn about the strains, what the projection is for the flu season. And joining us right now to talk about that, Hartford Healthcare, St. Vincent Medical Center infectious disease specialist, Dr. Joanne Passalacqua joins us. Dr. Passalacqua, good morning. It's Paul. How are you?
Good morning. I'm good. How are you?
I'm very good, doctor. Thanks for joining us. So it's that time again, flu season, huh? What are the early projections here for an effectiveness, doctor, of a vaccine, and how tough the season might be? What are the early projections?
So we do have some concerns about the upcoming flu season. We watch the Southern Hemisphere, meaning our friends down in Australia. That's always the best predictor of how things may go here in the Northern Hemisphere. They precede us each flu season, and they've had a pretty rough season. Particularly, children 10 to 14 years of age in Australia had a lot of difficulty with flu this year, and that resulted in very high flu numbers for them, as well as an early kickoff to their flu season. So what that means for us is we're concerned that flu may come to us earlier here in the Northern Hemisphere, and that, you know, it may be particularly tough on our young people, and that often translates into children spreading illness to our frail elderly and older folks. I think the concern is that this is the first flu season that we'll see since COVID restrictions have been lifted, mm-hmm. right? Masking, social distancing, those were all the norm for the previous two flu seasons. And that may have resulted in ourselves being less exposed to flu and our natural immunity to influenza waning. And this will make vaccination all the more important.
Dr. Passalacqua, can people, I know this is probably a concern, and you're probably getting this question already, can people get both a COVID booster or maybe for some people an initial COVID vaccine and the flu shot at the same time or relatively close together? Any concerns about that?
Absolutely. For folks where, you know, transportation or time may be an issue, if you're due for your COVID vaccine, please go get it. If the timing of your COVID vaccine will be in line with the timing of a flu shot, the two can be done together. Studies show about a 10% increased rate of adverse reactions when you give the two vaccines together, but those are often things that are mild, so maybe a little more soreness in one's arm or a little higher level of fatigue. I tell people if you have the luxury of time and you can split them up, that's wonderful. But if it's easiest to do the two together, there's absolutely no reason why the two vaccines couldn't be given on the same day.
How long, doctor, before we know and the folks in your field know the efficacy of the flu vaccine? I mean, my GPs have always said get it, whether it's, you know, mildly effective or very effective that year. When do we get a good handle on that? How long do we have to wait?
Well, our health departments track the flu very carefully. Our CDC tracks the flu very carefully. In fact, you can go online and you can see flu tracking with our state health department. And so within a few weeks of the onset of the season, we get a sense of how well matched the vaccine is. Although, again, we learn a lot from our friends in Australia. So for them, 85% of their flu was influenza A, a strain called H3N2. And so prediction is that that will be the predominant strain here in the Northern Hemisphere, and that strain is included in our upcoming vaccine. In general, flu shots are not as efficacious as COVID vaccine, interestingly. They reduce the risk of severe disease by about 40 to 60%. But in view of the fact that a significant number of Americans die every year of flu, 40 to 60% reduction in severe disease still translates into a big deal for the American people.
And doctor, what can people do? What would you advise them to do if they want more information before they make a decision? What resources are available?
Well, we have our state health departments. There's local branches of our state health departments. There's good websites there. Our CDC has a wonderful website that's full of information on flu vaccine. I would tell people the simple things, masking and social distancing and hand washing, many of the things that we impressed upon people for COVID, these work for all respiratory viruses. You know, they all spread by the same route. And these things have been studied and shown to go a very long way in preventing illness. So, much as people want to be free of their masks and go back to life as usual, I would tell people that as flu numbers start to rise, the simple things like washing your hands, keeping, distance from crowds of people, wearing a mask, particularly elderly people with underlying health conditions, young children, these are some of the most important things that we can do to head off the flu, along with a flu shot as we enter the season.
Dr. Joanne Passalacqua, thank you. She is a Hartford Healthcare St. Vincent Medical Center infectious disease specialist. Doctor, thank you. We appreciate it, and hopefully we can chat down the road. Thanks.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. There you go, folks, from Hartford Healthcare St. Vincent's infectious disease specialist, Dr. Joanne Passalacqua. Boy, a lot of people are worried about home heating bills coming up for the cold months. We were talking about this on the afternoon show, natural gas, heating oil, and all that. Joining us right now is Jackie Kearns. She is Chief Financial Well-Being Officer at Affinity Federal Credit Union. They have locations in Norwalk and New Haven. We talk about the transition to fall means paying for all these home heating bills, and that's going to stretch people. Jackie, good morning. It's Paul here. How are you?
Good morning, Paul. I'm well. How are you today?
Not too bad, not too bad. And I'm glad I'm talking to you because on my normal afternoon show here, this is in the news all the time. Natural gas, who knows what that's doing, heating oil, and that's all fat and happy in the summer when we don't have the furnaces on. But, now we're starting to get that chill in the air, Jackie, and it's, at least my furnace works, but then come the bills, right?
Oh, it's so true, Paul. It's amazing how, especially in the Northeast, we feel it all of a sudden, right? Like you said. And one of the things that I think is a great way to think about this is planning, right? As we talk about it so often, how do we budget? How do we get in front of it? But most importantly, who can we partner with on doing these things? Our energy companies, definitely the providers of heat. I know, especially in Connecticut, there's a lot of those who use home oil or natural gas. Definitely figure out a way to connect with those partners really quickly. There's also some assistance from the state level that can be provided, and that is super important for those of us who need that extra help now with those rising costs that you mentioned.
And Jackie, I'm sure people, and we hear it every year, right? But one thing you can do is take a look at your home and make sure the windows are good, make sure the insulation is good. I mean, it sounds so elementary, but some people don't do it. And one thing I've gotten to doing, now I live by myself, I have a two-bedroom condo, but Jackie, if I'm not going to be there during the day or maybe at night, I close the door to the extra bedroom or I close the door to the bathroom I'm not using. And it may sound goofy, but that's areas I'm not having to pay for to heat and cool.
That's right. You're doing the right thing. It's taking an inventory. I also call it the energy audit. Make sure you're looking at those little areas that are drafty in your home. talking to providers of better insulation or weatherproofing. There's some cheap options that you can do yourself if you're a to-doer. I'm not, but you can if you find the right person to help you. Or go to those providers who can install more energy-efficient windows, doors, sashes of that thing. You also mentioned something about closing doors. Also, open your blinds on a very sunny day. Mm-hmm. That natural heat during the day really helps as well.
Jackie Kearns is the guest. She is the Chief Financial Wellbeing Officer of the Affinity Federal Credit Union. They have locations in Norwalk and in New Haven. Jackie, what do you advise to folks who say, geez, I can't pay this bill, or if I pay this bill, I can't afford my medications, or I'm going to have to be eating crackers? I mean, what do they do?
Yeah, from a well-being perspective, you're absolutely right. Costs on the rise are a real impact to your wallet. There's a few things that we offer. So first, when you think about it, make sure that you actually have that discussion with a financial professional. We are here to help you. The second part are those energy companies I mentioned before. There's a lot of assistance, reduction of cost over time, monthly budget plans. Believe me, I'm on one, and I live in the Northeast. It really helps, itemize that cost over time. And the other thing, too, is there are assistance programs, as I mentioned before, if you're really in a need that you have a dire situation or you've lost some income. We don't want you choosing between medication and energy. They're both super important to your well-being.
And finally, Jackie, should some people consider, and I've had friends that have done this, maybe consider, although there's a higher upfront cost, maybe they've just never looked into, there's not much you can do with air conditioning on this, but with heating, there are alternate ways to heat your homes, right, which they may cost more upfront, but these systems may pay for themselves over time.
It's such a good point, Paul. I think when you think about your home, you know it best. What is the age of your HVAC system? How can you actually have a more energy efficient one with rebates put in and installed? Switching from a traditional oil to a natural gas option, if available in your area, also can bring costs down in some cases. Definitely speak to a specialist on that, but more importantly, budget for it. There are always ways to finance that over time and maybe take the bite out of those initial costs that we're seeing right now this season.
And Jackie, how can people get more information on this? Any ideas?
Yeah, actually go to the Connecticut.org site. 211 is another option to call if you're in dire need. There's the Connecticut Energy Assistance Program. We also offer our own advice. Like I said, come into one of our branches in Norwalk or New Haven. We're happy to talk with you, budget for you, and help you out in these dire situations, as well as just everyday situations, right? They don't always have to be direful. And like you said, just think about where you can plan and what you can do to keep your home energy efficient.
Jackie Kearns, the guest, Chief Financial Wellbeing Officer at the Affinity Federal Credit Union. As she mentioned, locations in Norwalk and New Haven. The topic today, budgeting for those big winter heating bills that are coming up. Hey, Jackie, thanks. Good info. And thanks so much for joining us. And we'll talk down the road. We appreciate it.
Paul, thank you. Have a great day.
You too, Jackie. Thank you. Jackie Kearns there, Chief Financial Wellbeing Officer at Affinity Federal Credit Union. They have locations in Norwalk and in New Haven. Look, folks, especially in the summer with my air conditioner going all day, I finally figured out. Close the door to the bedroom you're not using, Ace. You can't use two bathrooms at a time. Close the door for one. I know, it took me a while. It only took me 61 years, and I figured that out. Cutting-edge thinking, your host. All right, let's talk about careers and jobs, because we spend, about a third to a half of our time there during the day, depending upon where you are and what you like to do, whether you love your job, hate your job, or working from home or whatever, and we'll talk about that right now. Julie Bauke joins us, President and Chief Career Strategist at the Bauke Group. That's the Bauke Group, B-A-U-K-E, and you can check them out online at thebaukegroup.com. And Julie, good morning. How are you?
Morning. You got some big shoes to fill over there.
Well, yeah, I stagger through it. I'm not nearly as good as she is, but it's the best I can do. This is interesting. There's a Bloomberg story about Generation Z, Gen Z workers, and they're apparently, this is interesting, Julie, they're not all that thrilled with working remotely. A, define Gen Z for the audience, and B, what are your thoughts on this?
So Gen Z currently are age 10 to 25. So as you can see, there's only, if you just look at, you know, kids with a four-year degree, or even if you go down to 20, age 20, it's a very small portion of Gen Z that's in the workforce right now. They just joined post-college 3 years ago. And so as you look ahead, you know, this the way they look at work, you know, everything about them is going to continue to take over to be a larger portion of the workforce for a very long time. And so we need to be concerned about how we are orienting, how we are engaging the youngest workforce, the youngest workers. And, you know, I don't know about you, but when I was 22 to 25, let's just say, I mean, you know, I could barely find my way to the bathroom and back to my desk. You know, so let's do give some consideration to the fact that this is all very new to them, and they came into the workplace during COVID. And so they started, a lot of these young workers started their careers from home. They did an orientation from home. Mm. They did, you know, they met their quote unquote, met their coworkers online, if at all. And organizations were trying to just keep the boat afloat. And so really thinking about anything beyond, okay, you know, I'm Fred, I'm your boss, here's your work, get started, was probably really given the short shrift. And we're seeing it now in how disconnected and disengaged they feel from their jobs and the people there.
Sure, because here they are, Julie, and the guest is career specialist Julie Bauke. You know, they came out of college, and their first, as you say, their first full-time gigs maybe were COVID. So unlike you and I, who were, like you said, Julie, you know, stumbling around the office, or in my case, stumbling around radio stations, you know, being an intern and everything on up. I mean, they've gone right from college to working at home, and they basically don't know the dynamics of a workplace.
Right. So, you know, I have a young man who's a friend of mine, who's the son of a friend, and he took his first job out of college based only on the Zoom interview. And when things opened back up and he went into the office, he was horrified.
Really?
By the sexist pictures on the wall, what? In the bathrooms. It was a complete bro culture. And he was sent out to buy booze, and it was just, it was just, the whole job was like a frat party. And that's just not who he is. And he said, you know, if I would have had the opportunity to interview in person, I would have seen this and said no. He said, but in Zoom, I wasn't able to get a feel for things like that that would have made me run. And, you know, he quit. He found a better job. He's much happier now. But there's just some of that, I don't know if it's sort of that gut stuff, that's those signals, that feeling that we get that we want to dismiss sometimes. But that's really, you know, that's really the core of what a culture's like. It's sort of those day-to-day behaviors that are tolerated, accepted, encouraged. You know, all of that together makes a culture. And it's so hard to get a feeling for that on a Zoom call.
And finally, Julie, you get these stories, and you and I have seen them, where it's odd because you have some of these huge companies, these big CEOs, who say, all right, work's getting done. If you want to, you know, work at home, that's fine and dandy. And then you have a lot of these other companies, and I see it's mainly a lot of the financial companies, who say, no, 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 party's over, get your suits cleaned, start losing weight, and come back to the office, right? Right?
Lose those COVID pounds, right. Yeah, you know, and I think, Paul, the answer, there's not a one-size-fits-all answer. And it's also, I think, where we're going to land, most organizations are going to land in a hybrid culture. So not 100% in the office and not 100% at home. Because there is value to, you know, being able to meet your coworkers, be in a meeting with them, sort of pick up all the stuff that I remember picking up when I first started my job. But it's actually good for everybody. So I think a lot of companies have said, you know, I'm just going to pound my fist here and y'all come back to work. The problem with that is, in the last few years, a lot of people became really used to a remote work life. Mm-hmm. And if I am your best employee and I moved 2 hours away for school reasons or my wife's job or my husband's job or whatever it is, it's not possible for me to come back and be in the office every day. And so it's not as easy as saying everybody's been sitting at home waiting for me to pound my fist and come back, a lot of people have moved on. And some of those people are saying, well, okay, if you're not letting me work from home, at least part-time, I'm going to go find somebody who will.
The website is... sorry, Julie, finish up. I'm sorry.
That's okay. No, I was just going to say, so the trick is to find that mix and not make it one size fits all for everybody. It's okay to have different policies for different, you know, different rules, different departments, different functions, but we're not used to that. We're used to everybody has to follow and march to this drummer, and that's just not, that's not realistic anymore.
The website is the Bauke Group, T-H-E, Bauke, B-A-U-K-E Group, thebaukegroup.com. Julie Bauke has been the guest. Julie, thanks. We appreciate it, and take care.
You're welcome.
And I'm
Have
sure we'll talk down the road. Thanks.
All righty, thanks.
Brian, thanks. Julie Bauke there, thebaukegroup.com. Some big doings today in the town of Fairfield. And joining us right now to talk about that, friend of the radio station, first select woman of Fairfield, Brenda Kupchick, is on the line this morning. Brenda, hi, it's Paul. It's been a while. How are you?
I'm well. Good morning.
So we have we have some big doings today coming up, a big project announced near the Metro North station. What's going on?
Well, it's a very exciting day in the town of Fairfield, Paul, because the town entered into a tri-party agreement nearly 20 years ago for this entire development. And we've had, or the town has had, multiple issues with getting this development piece done. We are now finally, 20 years later, going to be breaking ground on some very exciting development around that train station, which is a long-awaited project, and it's something I talked about prior to getting elected, and I'm just so excited to be finally having a shovel in my hand today and helping our community move forward in this way, because we're going to be having more commercial development, which obviously is a good thing for all our taxpayers in town.
I see it's about a 24-acre parcel, Brenda, which is not a small one. What before we get into what's going to be there, part of the development, you said 20 years, and I know these things can take long, but were there any particular issues, one or two issues that slowed down the whole thing for a generation?
Well, you know, it was a unique agreement, right? So it was a tri-party agreement between the town, the state, and a developer. And the train station, as we know, is there, the Metro Center, the parking, which we needed. We needed that third train station because of the amount of commuters 20 years ago. And then there was some issues with the first developer. There was a lot of problems with the conservation department 20 years ago, having some issues with the way it was being developed. And actually, it delayed it quite a bit. And then we ran into 2008 when sort of the economy just fell out, mm-hmm. and it impacted that developer's ability to then build what he originally planned. First Selectman Slato was in charge, or was the leader then, and then it was stalled. There was another developer that took over. Nothing really was happening there. I'm not sure why. Obviously, I wasn't the first select person at the time. But we really worked hard. When I came in, I wanted to emphasize our economic development in our town in a much more robust way, just because it's so important to have that balance, right? To have some of that tax base being pulled from commercial and not mm-hmm. heavily relied on our residents. And this is the last big piece of property in our town. And so when this developer picked up and came and met with me and my team, said he wanted to purchase it from the developer who had it. And we were super excited, and we want to be engaged and involved in it because it's an important piece in our town. And we're going to have a hotel there. We're going to have residential, some commercial retail. This is going to be a really important project for our town. It's going to revitalize that complete area down there. I want to connect it a bit to our downtown.
Well, Brenda, are you there, or do we lose you? Did we lose Brenda? Let's see. Think we may have lost her. Is she there?
Oh.
Oh, now you're back. Okay, there you go. Now you're back.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, you broke up a little bit. You were talking, Brenda, for a moment about tying the development into other areas and about just moving it along to make the area even all the more attractive.
Right. So like I said, this is our largest piece of undeveloped property in town, and this is going to be a transportation hub. There's going to be residential, a hotel, retail, restaurants. It's going to revitalize that in complete area. I don't know if you're familiar with that area.
Oh yeah.
If you've taken a train out of the Metro Center.
Oh yes, absolutely. I pass through on Metro North a while. Yes, every so often.
Right. So it needs a boost, and we're finally going to do that. I'm really looking forward to welcoming Accurate, who was our new developer there, and his plans are really going to be perfect for this area, and we are looking forward to working with him hand in hand to make sure this is developed in the way that we have always expected it to be.
And Brenda, finally, you mentioned a hotel plan for the site there. How big of a hotel, and is this going to be run by a local entity, a regional entity? Is this going to be a chain? Because the hotel and the lodging aspect of this, I think, is kind of intriguing.
Right. So this has been sort of a sticking point, and I know it's difficult for developers. They have to go through a process, right? They have to have reach out to hotel chains. They do sort of a survey to see if it's something that's going to work in the area.
Sure.
Now, we have two universities in town, which, you know, they have parents coming to visit. It's usually an issue for families coming to Sacred Heart or Fairfield mm-hmm. University. They have trouble finding hotels. We don't have that many in town. And so we worked with this developer and also our planning and zoning department, and they put it in as sort of an approval, the TP&Z. So the second phase, they can build the first phase, but the second phase cannot be built until a hotel is built there. So I know this developer has been in contact with some of the hotel chains and some others. So I'm not sure what they're going to do yet, but it is part of the project. It's about 100. They're looking at about 115 room hotel, but we're not sure which one yet.
Oh, it's a good size. That'll be good too, especially around move-in time and graduation time. Well, congrats as we move the ball, we matriculate the ball down the field on this. Fairfield First Select Woman Brenda Kupchick, the groundbreaking taking place later on at the big site of a 24-acre parcel at 219 Ash Creek Boulevard. Brenda, good to speak with you again. Take care. Congrats, and we'll chat down the road. Thanks.
All right, you take care, Paul. Have a good day.
You too. Brenda Kupchick, First Select Woman of the town of Fairfield. So a big development underway, not a small piece of land. 24 acres, roughly 23.8, 219 Ash Creek Boulevard, residential, retail, transit-oriented development, and a hotel as well, which I guess would make sense around move-in time and graduation time for the universities. Where do people stay around here? Good point.